Kev, very important question as we get the show started.
We'll decide if it's important or not. Can ask it and we'll decide if it's important.
Morning, Andy.
That has not changed. Can't fix my hair right now. Okay. Craig, do you have any tattoos?
No.
Pooley, do you have any tattoos?
No.
Okay. Austin Matthews, this is where this is headed.
So I'm the only one here of the three of us with the tattoo. Producer Tyler, do you have... No, he doesn't. Scrizzy? Yes, okay, Scrizzy does. So out of the five of us.
I'm the only one in the immediate pool and family that doesn't have one.
Are your relatives have one too?
My daughters all have them. Uh-huh. And the youngest one is hilarious because each one that she gets somehow solves world peace. And you look at it and go, really? Like, there's the most unbelievable reason and justification for each one.
Well,
with
mine
a specific storyline to it.
Well, I like that. Then, like, when people get the barbed wire around their arm and you're like, what's that?
It's barbed wire around your arm.
So like,
your
I like the ones that have meaning.
So what's your meaning?
Well, so I have a tattoo of my... So I'm Aries, and I do... like I like the Zodiac.
Oh, this just sounded so much like my daughter.
Yeah.
Crazy. Listen to this solving
So I have
peace.
The ram's horns, and then it's surrounded by flames because we're very passionate, quick to love, quick to forgive. Like, we're very up and down,
I guess you could say. Keep going on that one. So you've got love and forgive in there.
quick to get angry.
Oh, really?
Yes. Listen,
this
whatever.
This tattoo is making more and more sense.
I prefer just passionate, right? So it's the ram's horn surrounded by flames, and then I have a phoenix rising also from the flames, right? So the reborn, rebirth, reinvent. So I that's what I have on the back. And then on my wrist, I have my personal mantra, which is peaceful heart, warrior spirit, which I need to look at when I start to get angry and it grounds me. So that's what I have.
Okay, which explains why you wear long sleeve sweatshirts and gloves when you work with Craig and I, because you never, ever look at the tattoo when you work with Craig and I.
I was about to say that.
Ever.
I've worked with Andy. I have worked with Andy a long, long time.
She's never looked at her wrist.
I never seen her do that.
Because I'm too busy using it to point at you and yell. So, so those are my tattoos, and we're talking about it, because, yes, Austin Matthews, what a buzz on the internet. Love to know what his means. And it's huge. I mean, it is on his right arm, so he's back home in Arizona, and it was the artist who posted it, and it's his right shoulder down the bicep, basically to the elbow, and it's a lion with a crown. Very well done, but it's a lion with a crown. So
a lot of financial wherewithal for a 19-year-old to spend that much money on a tattoo.
Yeah, tattoos are not cheap.
That one wasn't.
And it takes time. Like, that one, I would say, had to have taken, I would say, 2 days.
Really?
Depending on his pain threshold as well. Because sometimes...
Pretty tough kid.
Sometimes it's the pain that also you're like, okay, I'm done. Oh, yeah. Sometimes those things can take
I'd be concerned that would throw my wrist shot off just a little bit.
So is he now...
it doesn't throw your wrist.
So I'm going to try to get into the meaning of this. So he's the king of the jungle. He's crowned himself the captain of the Maple Leafs.
Clearly, this is what he's done. He's like, Lou, you say you're not naming a captain. I'm getting it on my arm.
He just sits there and goes, I don't have to wear a C. I got the lion.
Wouldn't it be great if Mitch Marner just got a little lion cub on his little arm? But then grow.
And then it grows.
Oh, yeah. That would be, trust me.
My mother, when I got my... I wonder how Mama Matthews must feel. Because when I got my first tattoo, my mother was in tears. Because she's... Of course, when she gave birth to me, I was perfect, right? And then I've gone now and I've messed up my body. She was in absolute tears. And then she said, and when you get older, that flame is going to turn into a forest fire when you gain weight.
That's not very...
Thanks, Mom.
Is that what she said to you?
Yeah. It's going to turn into a forest fire.
That's pretty funny.
I said, well, I guess that's his motivation to not gain weight.
That is pretty funny.
There is, yeah. It's really interesting. Like, my oldest daughter, I don't think she has any interest in getting a tattoo or piercings. My younger daughter has piercings, and she's headed towards a tattoo. And it won't be one. There'll be multiple tattoos.
Yeah, and that's my youngest. Yeah. My twins both have them as well. And it's hard. I mean, on the inside of the wrist, the mantra is the same thing. Mm-hmm. And my one daughter is vivre non se vivre, which is, you know, live, just don't survive. And okay. It works.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, it works.
It is good, yeah.
See?
And she studied in France, and she's was a French major in college, so it had meaning to her, particularly at that time. So.
Do you speak Latin, Dave?
I do not.
Oh, I was just curious. I mean, Catholic upbringing and Notre Dame, my dad spoke Latin, and it was always interesting how he could take the Latin language and you know, traveling around the world.
Well, the Romance languages, right? Italian, French, they all fit. Yeah.
Okay, well, so I want to hear what the meaning is behind that, but that's what created the buzz.
What do you mean, the meaning? We should put a poll up.
But what is he? Is he the king of the jungle?
That's what I think.
That's
it is.
What Craig's
it's gotta
going
be
with.
That's yeah. Well, already he and was getting trolled though by Bailey, the mascot for the Los Angeles Kings, because they were already saying thanks for putting my image on your arm. And no, he's not going to L.A. People, let
Are
it go.
Are you sure? Maybe he is.
No, he's
maybe,
not.
Maybe it's just like foreshadowing. Just... Like he wants to be ready.
No, no.
He's telling the Kings, come after me.
Is that what he's? Yeah, king of hockey. I mean, the guy's got some confidence then. King of the jungle, king of hockey, I'm the leader. Either that or he just likes the lifestyle of the lion who just eats and sleeps and, you know, that's about it. And I'm not going to...
And what I would say about, you know, the lion is a big, powerful animal. And
yes.
That's a big, powerful player.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who knows?
He'll king of the jungle's hard to argue with right now.
It really is, isn't it?
For that age group, and be right in there.
Yep.
And if that's what gives you confidence, like, there is something. If you don't have a tattoo, it's hard to explain. But when you do get a tattoo...
As she explains to two guys that don't have tattoos.
But that's what I mean. When you get it, there is something about putting a stamp on that feeling. And that even if down the road, it wavers. Like, let's just say he's feeling pretty confident about himself. Why wouldn't he? The year that he had. He gets that kind of tattoo. So let's just say, I don't know, you hit a roadblock in your career, as you all do.
There will be one.
That tattoo will always be a reminder of how you once felt, and it encourages you to get that feeling back.
Well, speaking about challenges, how about this?
I know, I'm getting so...
It is such a sales job.
It's so prophetic when it comes to tattoos, but I'm being honest. It really does. It brings you back to that time when you're like, I got that when I was feeling pretty damn good about myself, and you know what? I'm going to get back there. That's all I'm saying.
So let me ask you this. Do you think Matt Murray, after the last two games, he should have, like, it's all my fault tattooed on his arm, like, because he's not feeling good?
No, that's not what you, that and you do not want to remember that.
How about this stupid article?
Okay, wait. I was going to bring up the article.
That's a whole topic. That's not an article.
I wasn't sure if you had read it.
Oh.
So I printed it out and I left it for you.
Like, it's, I don't know.
Do like, we want to go there?
The legacy of Malkin and Crosby is at stake in game five?
So, really? So this is an article. ESPN senior writer David Fleming wrote an article. And, I mean, some of the things he points out, you're like, mm-hmm. Other
like
things, you're like,
okay, like what? What did he point out?
Malkin and Crosby play for Pittsburgh.
Got their spelling right. First name, Sydney and Evgeny. Yep. Yeah.
No, it's true. And then this is what got everyone up in arms. I mean, he's basically saying that game five is, well, let me see if I can find, where am I here now, where the actual quote is. Where he goes on to say that Game 5 is basically a legacy-defining game for these two players.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, so he said Thursday night in Pittsburgh is still shaping up to be a legacy-defining game for the struggling duo of Crosby and Malkin.
Did he watch the game, Game 4? Did he watch Game 4 and watch what Sidney Crosby did in that game? He had the game by his throat. They didn't win. You tell me Sidney Crosby wasn't good? I mean, it's so stupid and ridiculous. It's not even, like, I don't even want to talk about it, but I will because it's so stupid and ridiculous.
Well, it's what happens is you get deep into the playoffs and people come out that aren't familiar with the exact context
yeah,
of what's
familiar.
Happening.
Sometimes you show your ignorance by what you don't say. Or no, you rarely show your ignorance by what you don't say. You often show it by what you do say.
Yeah.
Welcome to the club, Mr. Fleming.
But it's... You know, the great players look for something to separate themselves. It's not about their legacy. It's about them separating themselves. And I've thought that Sidney Crosby, from day one this year, wanted the two cups in a row for his to do it because no one had done it in the last 20 years. But that's not about his legacy
Dave, you know this. I mean, you've played with great players. I mean, you were a very, very accomplished player yourself. I mean, players don't go in... Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby aren't sitting there going, geez, Gino, what do you think about our legacy? If we don't play good on game five, what about our legacy?
So I'm going to do something differently.
Yeah. Give me a break. I mean, this is just, it's silly. It's just silly. I mean, anyway, I'm glad that the one page is nothing because really, the page that's blank has much more use to me than the page with the written
story.
Yeah,
because you can do your notes for tonight's TV.
See, I mean, this is what we agreed, that if they do win the cup, to win cups in back-to-back years, it puts them in another...
Separator.
It is. It's a separator. It puts them in another conversation.
For me, it's...
The fact that they win cups back-to-back years, and as you mentioned, it's something that just hasn't been done in over 20 years. And then also, a couple weeks ago, there was the talk of, you know, Jonathan Toews is the three cups, and, you know, where does Sidney Crosby match there? Well, what will end up separate? It just puts them in a separate conversation.
Well,
but I agree that if they don't win... it doesn't hurt their legacy in any way, shape, or form.
The best players motivate themselves in a whole different manner. Oh, yeah. They want to be the best player every game. They want to be the best player in game 49 this year. They just do. That's why they're the best, and that's why they're the most consistent. And Crosby, what he did this year through the course of the year was remarkable. But he also did it when I saw him on March 3rd in Ottawa. You know, it had nothing to do with anything other than it was March 3rd in Ottawa.
Yeah. I know what the most painful thing for great players, really any player, is. Losing always hurts. And there's one team that's going to win in any sport. And it'll hurt LeBron and when they don't win, because they're not going to beat the Golden State Warriors, in my view. But, you know, you go through. But to me, what hurts more and is a real deep pain is losing and knowing you haven't played at your best. Okay? Yeah. And you haven't found a way to. So, you know, we can look at Sidney Crosby and say, oh, yeah, he scored his first goal and since 2009. Well, he wasn't in the Stanley Cup final in 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, or 15. So really, like, it's empty. It doesn't mean anything. So last year, they win the Stanley. He won the Conn Smythe, didn't he, last year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Just silly.
No. Hey, silly. Listen, and that was what I even brought up after the first two games when Pittsburgh had won. And, you know, we were all talking about Pekka-Rinne. I had said that. I said, you know, it's one thing to lose. It's one thing to lose when you didn't play your best and you know you had more to give. Like, that has to hurt. But if you've given it your all.
But I'll even go a little bit deeper than that. If you've given it your all, you might not be at your best, but you know you've given it your all.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now both these teams are locked at two. So, and Sidney Crosby, he did have a
legacy. Jeez. I mean,
I was going to get into that a little. I was going to warm up to that article. Craig just came right out of the gate.
But why are you going to warm up to it?
I don't know. Because I wanted to talk about tattoos and piercings.
It's always interesting when you get through to the Stanley Cup Finals and sitting in the locker room and you see someone walk in that you've never seen before. And you wonder what question is coming that has nothing to do with anything that's going on. Nothing to do with hockey. Nothing to do with. And they're going to ask a real philosophical question because it's a critical time in their day. That has nothing to do with anything you're doing.
We brought this conversation up back in October.
We did.
Remember I told you that? Now this is obviously going, you know, another way. But when I say, like, you know, there are news people who come on in because suddenly there's a big story in hockey. So they all want to come on in and be a part of what's making news. And then they
and
just
it was Austin Matthews' four goals.
It was Austin Matthews' four goals. And somebody walks on in and quips about the
cut in front of Andy.
Yeah, the parade. And I'm like, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, in a scrum, Craig. No. In a scrum, stepped in front of Andy.
Listen, there
that'd
been
be like stepping in front of the President of the United States in a.
You will get the shove. You will get the to the left, to the left.
Get out of my way.
Excuse me, Montenegro. That's what you'll get at that point.
That's the beautiful thing about Andy. She treats everybody like Montenegro.
Yeah, see? Doesn't equality
matter,
all
doesn't
around.
Doesn't matter if you're big or small. You're Montenegro in her eyes.
You are.
But it's true. And I mean, it's tough. Listen, I think, and the way people reacted to the article, and I think what bothers everyone.
How did they react to it?
Well, everyone just thought, they're like, you know, I read it, my computer went up in flames, right? It was just like, you didn't. And I think what's bugging people is that word legacy. Listen, you know, Crosby had a great game. Did Malkin have a great game? You could argue, no. Did Phil Kessel? No. Like, there are things, obviously, you can look at and say, look, things didn't work out. This is why they didn't win. This is why things are happening the last two games. This is why they've been outplayed in the majority of the periods in the four games that have been played. Sure, no problem. You can point that out. I'm not saying here that the Pittsburgh Penguins are untouchable and how dare you criticize them. No, not, it's not even close. I think it's the word legacy that bothers me. Like, really? You're saying game five? That's a legacy-defining game?
If you want to define everything down to one game, good luck.
That's why it's a best of seven, because it can't be.
No, that's why since the time Sidney Crosby entered the league in October of 2005, he's been the league's best player during that period of time. Okay, and it's not by accident. It's because over a period of time, he has been exceptional. And yeah, like to Dave's point, there's going to be times when you have bumps along the road. He had the injuries. He went through a stretch, you know, before they brought in Mike Sullivan, where he wasn't as highly productive as he once was. But when you look at the large body of work, and it's a large, large body of work for both Malkin and Crosby, it is ridiculous to think that one game can define anything about them. Forget about legacy, put that aside, anything about them cannot be defined in one game. They have too many accomplishments over too long a period of time.
There's a nice trophy room somewhere in Pittsburgh, or a couple of nice trophy rooms somewhere in Pittsburgh that would say Art Ross's and Rocket Richard's and Conn Smythe's and Stanley Cups and
Hart trophies
that are much bigger than a day.
Yeah.
So, exactly. Of course, the conversation that's happening now.
If you want to talk about a day that defined things and defined a legacy, let's talk about yesterday and talk about D-Day and talk about the sacrifice that those guys went through and, you know, everything that, you know, allowed us to be. That's a legacy-defining day, not Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final for people that have done everything at the highest level of this league.
So this is what we love now about two-day breaks in between games. And also, you know, when a team isn't doing well. We did it to Nashville, might as well do it to Pittsburgh. Already the conversation's being had about... Well, there's two conversations, I guess, is being had. Number one, should they have even pulled Marc-Andre Fleury when they did? Number two...
Yes, they should have, because...
Well, wait, I don't want you to answer it now. Craig, where are you going?
Is this a tease?
Is he just... He's leaving. He's so mad, he doesn't even want to have this conversation. He's like, I'm going to pack up. I'm taking my toys. I'm leaving the playpen. I'm going home.
It was a test. You know what it was a test of?
What?
The emergency broadcast system. I wanted to see...
How quickly
if I could turn my back and if it would have a difference. And
nope.
It did. You played right into my hands, which is rare.
But I'm going to pick up right where I left off. So you got to answer this when we come back. We're gonna have Dean Evason. He's actually the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals. We've been talking so much about the Nashville Predators, their development system, and how a lot of the players right now having an impact on the Preds in the final played for him. So he's going to join us, but then I also want to get to that conversation that's being had right now. Should they have pulled Fleury when they did, and do you pull Murray now and put Fleury back in? It's a great conversation to have, so stick around, Craig. Don't go anywhere as you continue to listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1015. Stream online, tsn.ca. Pittsburgh Penguins take you to the ice for practice. No Hornquist, no Bonino. We know the Bonino situation, but not quite sure what's going on there with Hornquist. So things not looking all that good for a Pittsburgh Penguins team that we knew was even just walking into the Stanley Cup playoffs battered and bruised. So see if we can get some updates there. But no Bonino, no Hornquist at practice for the Pittsburgh Penguins. All right, welcome back into Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. Streaming online, tsn.ca. Dean Evason, the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, the AHL affiliate for the Nashville Predators, will be joining us in about 5 minutes' time. Andy Petrillo alongside Dave Poulin and Craig Button. So the question now is, should the Penguins go back to Marc-Andre Fleury in Game 5? Are they in need of that spark? It was a huge topic of conversation when they even took Fleury out of the net, put Matt Murray in. A lot of people said, well, of course, Matt Murray's your guy now, your guy of the future. But Marc-Andre Fleury has been playing so well. You're in the third round. Why would you pull him? And it's funny how in sports work, you put Matt Murray in, they win. So the decision, it's a genius decision. You don't even think twice. And everyone admires Mike Sullivan's, you know, guts, I guess you could say, to just in the middle of the Stanley Cup playoffs to go, no, we're changing it. Not even looking back, not even thinking twice. Well, except now, when they don't win, you suddenly start to go back to point zero and say, well, that moment there, that TSN turning point, should they have made the change?
Okay, so they make that first change. Do you really think that Mike Sullivan, Rick Tocchet, and Jacques Martin were thinking at that point, we have to go to Mike Murray right now because he's the goalie of the future. Matt Murray, sorry, because he's the goalie of the future. Not even a remote consideration. They went to Matt Murray because he gave them the best chance to win the next game against Ottawa. That's what they felt as a staff. Had nothing to do with the future, the past, the present. Yes, he had a history. Yes, he'd won a cup. Yes, he'd played well for Mike Sullivan in Wilkes-Barre. But Mike Sullivan didn't say, this is my guy. He played really well in Wilkes-Barre. I'm going to use him in this game against Ottawa. They thought he gave the Pittsburgh Penguins the best chance to win the next game. That's why they went with him. If that conversation right now is that Marc-Andre Fleury gives them the best chance to win Game 5, in their minds, that he bolsters the locker room, he's a popular kid, that's got nothing to do with it. Does he give them the best chance to win the next game? That's what they're basing the decision on.
This is what Mike Sullivan had to say when he was asked about the goaltending change, because it's one of our favorite topics.
We haven't lost games because of our goaltending. That's my thought.
So
to follow up, I guess there'd be no reason, you don't think there's a reason to think of a change at this point?
Well, you know, like anything, Dan, we make our lineup decisions on a game-by-game basis. And the one comment I will make is that we didn't lose a game last night because of our goaltending.
So making it very clear, it wasn't Matt Murray.
What do you want him to say? That it was Matt Murray?
Yeah, point the finger. What do you ever expect them to say?
This isn't Annie Petrillo at the
day.
Saying, like, it's
I would
all your
never
fault.
Do that.
It's all your fault.
Look you at heard? Your wrist, Andy. Look at your wrist, quick.
What Mike should have said, you heard what the fans in Nashville said. Right. It's all your fault, and that's how I agree with the fans in Nashville. That's what he should come out and say.
No. Okay, so this is what Bob McKenzie had to say on the goaltending situation on starting Murray or Fleury.
I would be hugely surprised if there's a goaltending change here. Matt Murray is the goaltender of the present for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's the goaltender of the future. And I believe that when Mike Sullivan made the move from Fleury to Murray, it was for better or for worse. And in terms of Murray, yeah, you know what? You can talk about the shots that have beaten him. Yeah, I thought he was exceptional in the third period of the last game. And I think Mike Sullivan is a coach that goes primarily with his head. And his head says, you know what? We're not losing because of our goaltending. This is my guy. This is our goaltender. We're going to ride him out. But imagine the heartstring story here. If they did, and I'm saying if, and I don't think they will, they go back to Marc-Andre Fleury for the last hurrah, and he were to reel off a couple of wins, it would grow into great Pittsburgh Penguin folklore history. But as I say, I'd be really surprised if that were to happen.
So instead of picking on the goalie situation, if that's the case, where are you looking then if you're looking at this Pittsburgh Penguins lineup and saying this is what's different from last year's run, other than Chris Letang missing? And obviously there's, you know, injuries happening there. But out of the guys right now playing, you're pointing your finger and saying, yeah, this is where I'm thinking the problem is.
Okay, I have to stay with the goalies for one more second.
Okay.
You can rephrase the question, okay? When they made that unconventional move to Murray, and I will use the word unconventional, Marc-Andre Fleury had shutouts in two of his three previous games in the playoffs, including beating Washington in game seven. And then shutting out. So he had literally given up. He had given up two goals in three games, including an overtime loss to Ottawa, when he made that move in the previous three games to the 5-1 loss. So it was a staggeringly, I mean, that move didn't get as much attention had it gone awry. It would have been, you know, huge. But that's why I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Fleury. That's just my point. That's how individually game based. To your question, Andy.
Can I just add one thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
They won 2-0 and 1-0. It's not like he had this massive goal support either.
No.
And I would
he
suggest.
He won games.
And I would, yeah.
So that's what's leading to my next question.
Yeah, so he did win the games. And you know, just quickly, and I say this all the time, the best offensive team in the history of the National Hockey League was the 80s Oilers. The best. We think about all the
great
players that came
through. Yeah, they were pretty good, right,
Craig? And you know what their biggest win was in franchise history? 1-0 shutout on Long Island in the 1984 Stanley Cup playoffs with Grant Fuhr in the nets. Wayne Gretzky's favorite black athlete, when asked who his favorite black athlete was, by Charles
Barkley. Brilliant answer.
Anyway, all kidding aside, you know, and it showed them that they could win a game in a tight scoring game. Because, you know, the team that can win in multiple ways is the most dangerous team.
No question. No question.
So who needs to score some more goals?
Phil Kessel.
There you go.
Phil Kessel. For me, Crosby played so well in game four. And I went down and broke down. Like last year, that line of Bonino, Hagelin, and Kessel was so good and diffused the pressure and the heat on everybody else so much. Yes, you had Letang with his 15 points. But that line, Bonino had 18 points. He has 7 right now. Hagelin had 16 points. He has 1 right now. And Kessel had 22 points in the playoffs. He has 20 right now. So you're saying, well, Kessel's doing what he's supposed to. But he was doing it with two line mates. And they were such an offensive force as a line and gave Mike Sullivan so many matchup options through the playoffs. They don't have that right now. They just don't. I know Bonino's hurt. But to me, way more has to be expected from Phil Kessel. And he's also got sort of a quiet 20 points, if that's even possible. I want a loud 2 points in game five, a really loud critical power play goal, a loud goal at a tie game, a loud goal in the last minute of a period, a really classic Phil Kessel type of goal is what you need. I think a ton of pressure has to be on him right now in that locker room.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you think about how Pittsburgh overwhelmed their opponents last year en route to the Stanley Cup with four lines that really, and obviously Letang was in the lineup, who's a significant absentee, and you know his presence is completely missed by the Pittsburgh Penguins. But you know, I say this, you know, I was saying it off air to you, but I'm always reminded of John F. Kennedy's great quote about ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. Well, for Phil Kessel, Mike Sullivan's trying to get him up against Matt Irwin and Yannick Weber. He's trying to get him into situations where he can take advantage. So this now does, in my view, become about Phil. What can you do for your team? Because this is about what you need to do for your team right now. Because I think those other guys, Crosby and Malkin, have carried a lot of the load.
Well, let's turn our attention onto the Nashville Predators. We talked about they're getting that spread out scoring, everyone contributing there. And we've also discussed how they've all come up the system, played for the Milwaukee Admirals. And joining us now, Dean Evason, head coach of the Admirals. How you doing, Dean?
I'm fine, thank you.
So we've been giving a lot of credit, obviously, to the development there in the Nashville Predators system. You're a huge part of that. One of the players that we have been focusing on the last couple days has been Frederick Goudreau, and not just because he doesn't have a stall, but because, you know, he's done something pretty impressive with his first three goals in the Stanley Cup Final, two of them game winners. But then you start to research this guy because you're like, who is he? And you discover wasn't drafted in the NHL, wasn't even drafted into the QMJHL. But what did you see in him when he played with you?
Well, obviously a tremendous story, but if you get to speak to Freddie at any point or meet him, you'll understand why he's been able to have success and why he's so humble and the whole stall thing. He doesn't care where he sits as long as he gets a jersey and he can go play hockey, and I mean hockey anywhere. He doesn't care practice games, where we are, how many games we play on the road, 3 and 3 nights. He plays the same way and practices the same way. But it's taken him some time. We actually sent him down to the East Coast League a few years ago to try to find his game. He has obviously God-given skills. His talent is very high. It's taken Freddie some time to believe in himself, to gain that confidence, to mature. To become the player that you are seeing now. We've seen it in practice. It didn't translate into games in the American Hockey League level for a while. But once Freddie gained that confidence and again really believed in himself, he started to do the things that you're seeing him do in the National Hockey League. He did with us in the American Hockey League.
What is the communication there? Like, I always try to figure out the communication between Milwaukee, Nashville, when they draft players, like what kind of input is put into this is what we're looking for, and then this is how we develop them. Because you can also draft a really good player, but if you're not developing them properly or in a certain way, what's the point, right? So what is the communication there? What page are you guys on, Milwaukee, Nashville, and saying this is the type of player we want to create?
Well, I think the key word is communication. We have a tremendous amount of communication between David Poile and Paul Fenton, is who I deal with on a daily basis, and then with Lavi, Peter Laviolette, and all of us and the coaching staff down there. We communicate constantly with our scouts as well. I mean, I was just in Nashville for Game 4 and talking to all the scouts. All the scouts are there. We all feel a little piece or a little bit of responsible for helping guys like Freddie, you know, develop and become the players that they are. But I think it is communication. There's no egos. It's not like, oh, I drafted them or I signed them or I coached them in Milwaukee or what have you. It's just we're all trying to do the right things for the players, and then obviously to put ourselves, all of us, in a position to have successes with our teams.
So, Dean, a total of 13 players that have played in this year's playoffs went through you and the system in Milwaukee, and we'll take Fiala and Theros out of it for the moment. 11 are in the lineup right now in the Stanley Cup Finals. Which one of those took more of a sales job from you at some stage where you had to say to the organization, no, guys, hang on a second here. We have something here. We may have something here. Because I watched a number of them go through there, and there were times when you'd say, okay, well, this isn't going to be a fit. But is there a player in particular in that group that you had to say, hey, guys, we've got something here?
Well, I guess you could, I mean, obviously point right to Freddie Gaudreau. I mean, there's been question marks on his skating. People have talked about, you know, maybe he can't skate well enough at the National Hockey League level. And Paul Fenton and I, we just continually said, like, guys, it's not, this is not a guy that's slow. It may look like he's not going like the most smooth skater out there, but he gets there. His speed is not a problem. So it would probably be Freddie. I mean, we've had so many guys, it's hard to, you know, to pinpoint certain players, but obviously Freddie's had this success here, and he's a guy that was up and down a little bit throughout the year. And as you know, Dave, that there's when you first get called up, you're not throwing it all out there offensively, and you're being very cautious. You're being on the defensive side of pucks. So you don't see the skill set until you gain that confidence, and which Freddie has, obviously, at our level, and he's continuing to do it at that level on the biggest stage.
Well, Dean, I think it is all because of you. I don't think, all kidding aside, do you think as a coach now, you know, your background as a player who people would say, oh, he's not big enough, he's not quick enough, despite all the markers that said you're productive, has helped you as a coach relate to the different players and not only help the top end guys, but help players like Frederick Gaudreau, you know, take those steps and understand that there is opportunity for them?
Well, I was thankful that your father believed in me and drafted me in Washington. So, but yeah, no, there's no question that you know, that we take little pieces of what we did when we played and how we you know, our thought process, or certainly my thought process of, like you said, being too small, too slow, can't play, whatever, and you get, it motivates you, and then. And so in turn, we don't go to the players a lot and go, you know, this was my situation, this could be you. We just use our you know, experiences along the way to hopefully tweak and push and prod. And that's what coaching is now. It's a lot on the individual basis. It's one-on-one with the players and trying to get the best out of them if you see that ability. And there's so many people like that. So, yeah, I think we use those the skills that we've developed throughout our playing careers and then obviously coaching experiences along the way as well, what's worked and what hasn't worked. And hopefully we can help as many people get to the level that a guy like Freddie Gaudreau is at right now.
Dean, one player that's impressed me just remarkably during this run has been Matthias Ekholm. And you had him at the start of your head coaching career in Milwaukee, and he was a younger player. I first saw him at the Crawley Cup in Finland, and he stood out just to a different level. But even during this year's playoffs and during the finals, he has taken his game to another level again, physically in every respect.
Yeah, and he was the same way with us, very underrated. You know, we had Ellis and him at the same time playing together. And same thing, Ellie was getting all the, you know, he was the offensive guy and getting all the power play time. And Ecky was just the steady, sound guy, second power play unit for us, first penalty killer, and just did everything really well. And it's funny because we've seen the same thing and the same things happened in the American Hockey League of Milwaukee that's happening now. I mean, everybody are finally going, geez, this guy can really play. And that's what we did too. I mean, we were like, boy, this guy can play. Like, you got to give him a chance. And, obviously he worked, to get that opportunity and, the success that he's having as an all around player. He has way better upside offensively, I think, than we're seeing right now, because of the players in Josi and obviously Subban and Ellie, are so good. But Ekki has those abilities as well.
Well, Dean, I know the good old saying, it takes a village to raise a child, and it takes a lot of good hockey minds and good hockey people to produce a great hockey player, and that's what we're seeing right now with the Nashville Predators, and you're part of that. Thanks so much for taking the time here on Leafs Lunch.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dean.
That is Dean Evason, the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirable. Well, they're admirable.
Andy,
they're,
let me
tell
you.
They're quite admirable, I guess, that system that's going on there, the Admirals.
I think, and Dean touched on it, and I mean, you know, coaching, you want to give everybody an opportunity, but I don't know what it was, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I got a letter from a player who never played in the NHL but played with us in the minor leagues. And he played in a number of different organizations. But he sent me a letter thanking me for allowing him an opportunity to be the very best he could be. And that in all the organizations he was, that our organization, when I was in Calgary, treated every player and tried to help every player reach their goals, and he felt that. He didn't feel that it was skewed towards the first-round picks or the high-profile guys. And that, to me, is what Dean Evason's talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, Frederick Goudreau, everybody has an opportunity here. 11 guys in the lineup, you excluded Fiala and you excluded Saros. So, I mean, because of the injury, who did play mm-hmm. Fiala, Saros. And that's, I don't think you can just look at your first and second rounders. You, everybody has, because you talk about it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it takes a village to win a championship. You need everybody performing to the best of their abilities, and that starts with coaching, and you have to create that environment. And to me, that was one of the nicest letters I ever got from a player, and he never played. I'd love to tell you that he went on and had a Frederick Goudreau career, but he didn't. But he felt that he was given every opportunity to try to reach his potential.
And I competed against Dean head-to-head, and particularly when he was in Hartford and I was in Boston, and it was a battle every single night. But in a management role, you watch coaches of American League teams and junior teams to see how they develop professionally. And he's been on a real nice curve. He's been a longtime assistant coach. He's back as a head coach. So started as a head coach in junior, longtime assistant coach with the Washington Capitals, and now a head coach 5 years in Milwaukee, and this is going to be a head coach in the NHL. And a highly successful one who's done things. You talk about the pace of development. You forget about coaches developing at the right pace and doing the right things and going through the right experiences, and Dean Evason's going to coach in the NHL if he chooses to as a head coach, and I think he'll be very, very good at what he does.
Todd McClellan path. Go to junior, go be a head coach, go be an assistant, then, you know, you'll be a 20-year head coach in the National Hockey League. It's not about getting there quick. It's about getting there with staying power. And to have staying power, you better have a lot of different experiences to go through. I mean, Bruce Boudreau always says this, and he said this to me often. It was all those years in the minor leagues, you know what it did? It taught me what not to do.
And I get the you want to move things along. You want the pace to be quick because it is a business. But when you're drafting kids at 18, you have to be able to take the time. You have to know that not everyone is going to be the Austin Matthews, the Connor McDavid, the Stamkos. Like the guys coming out 18, 19, having an impact right away on their team. It just always kind of baffles me a little bit that you would hear that you wouldn't give a player a chance, that suddenly if he doesn't perform by 19, 20, you write him off. And, yeah. Oh, we're shocked that he's all of a sudden he's good at 24. Well, no, I mean, it just takes some time.
Different decisions that come into play here, Craig, and this is a topic for a different day when we don't have as many topics as we have today, but waivers come too early for a player right now. And so you've got to make decisions on a player and put him on waivers when you have no interest in putting him on waivers. And in this draft and develop model, it's fine to say it takes a player 4 years or 5 years. You don't have 4 or 5 years. He starts to attain mm-hmm. waiver rights. You want to send him to the minors. You can't. And now you're rushing him. So topic for a different day.
But Andy, here's
that's a good point, though.
Here's what I would say to you. In the quest to do everything quicker, it doesn't mean that it's right. And it doesn't mean it's going to change anything. I call them the natural law, the three natural laws of maturity. Physical, mental, and emotional. And you cannot speed them up. I don't care how hard you try. I don't care what you do. I don't care how hard you wish. You can't speed them up. Every player is going to mature at a different rate. And you got to recognize what those rates are. And then you got to understand that not only are you have to be patient with it and allow it to proceed, you also have to understand what environment are you putting them in. You're putting them in the best league in the world with the best players in the world that are 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 years older than you, and you're asking them to go, not just go in there and hold their own, to contribute. And if they're not physically ready or mentally ready or emotionally ready, good luck. And I see it. And you know, I say this is funny. I said, if cancer research If the sharing of research over time on cancer research was done the same way as pro sports in terms of learning what works and what doesn't work, we'd be stuck in the 1930s on cancer research. Because the same mistakes that were made 20 years ago and 30 years ago in development in all sports are the same ones being made today. And guess what? The secret isn't locked in Fort Knox. It's right there for everybody to see, but people don't want to see it. To your point, oh, we got to get there quick. Okay, get there quick. Mm-hmm. You're just not, doesn't mean you're getting there.
No, it's a really good conversation for another day, because Pooley, as you bring up, it doesn't seem like the rules and regulations that are part of the game are complementary to draft and develop. It kind of forces you to rush. So, no, really good conversation for another day. We got more coming up here. I also want to...
If we didn't spend so much time on this stupid legacy card.
Oh, my goodness, you're getting right back at that. At some point, I want to get to TSN Hockey's top 30 free agents and if the Toronto Maple Leafs should be interested.
I think we should remove top from it and just call them the free agents.
Really?
Hard out.
No, we don't have... You stop it. All right, we're going to get to that conversation when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Because I didn't take producer Tyler's count, we only have 30 seconds here. Does anyone want to contribute anything? Should I just take it? Do you want me to talk about tattoos and piercings?
Yeah, just
do whatever you want.
Look at you guys. You guys answering emails right now?
Yep. And we're ignoring you at the same time, so we're
yeah, I see what you're doing.
We're multitasking.
Well, I wouldn't exactly say what you're doing is multitasking. Yes. Women are the best at that. We've got the noon hour coming up next on Leafs Lunch.